Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror.
Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here, the Wrestle Horror Podcast. With me, as always, is my co-host, Donnie Hoover. Donnie, what is going on?
Oh, man, as usual, busy, busy.
Joining us sometimes is our play-by-play guy from New Ohio Wrestling, Mr. John Orlando.
Hey, it seems like I haven't seen you guys in a while because I've missed a couple, you know?
No, you have. You have. You're slacking.
Wait a minute. How come he gets to use busy, busy, busy as his excuse, but I'm slacking?
You're right? Slacking, man. You're
What's
slacking.
Up with that?
Because I'm the owner. That's why.
Yeah, I was going to say, you write the checks. That's why.
We're really excited on this episode. We've got a lady that has done everything in pro wrestling and then some. I was really excited when she responded to my email. I am, of course, talking about the Wounded Owl, Lufisto. Lou, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm, like, sweating. It is so hot in here.
Which Canada's is unusual for Canada.
I know. Canada, the land of snow. Is It's been, like, for you guys, it would be, like, in the hundreds, 105. Top humidity. It's terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, we can't be doing any of that.
Well, yeah, Ohio's better, but I'm saying better. I've wrestled actually in a place, it was a venue in Brooklyn, and it was like 105 in the venue. We walked down to the ring and we were already sweating.
So, wow.
Yeah, I guess it's everywhere now.
Well, see, you're just going to have to wrestle in Ohio sometime.
I'll have to go back, yeah.
A little bit cooler. Again, welcome to the Wrestle Horror Podcast. I don't even know where to start. I mean, you've got such a laundry list of accomplishments that, male and female championships, Lou. I mean, wow. We've been going over your biographies and everything, and your accomplishments are more than a lot of bigger, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but WWE type people, they don't have the accomplishments that you have.
Well, good. I mean, maybe because I've been doing it for so long, and it's going to be, next June is going to be 25 years. Like, I can't believe I lasted that long, but I'm still here, and I'm still putting on some great matches. I'm actually thinking that I'm having the best matches I've ever had. Actually, this past year, I really thought that was my last year. I wanted to quit. I was done. My knee hurts, all kinds of excuses where I'm like, oh, I'm done. And then I had a few matches. I was like, whoa, what is happening? And one of the summit in Toronto where I was, I think it happened there. Like, I wrestled Jordan Grace, and then I had an amazing match with Kobe Durst a few weeks before. And then I had a match with Josh Alexander, which, like, the crowd stood up after, and I was standing in the ring, and I was like, what's happening? And I'm like, well, still, you got some gas in the tank.
Well, you know, those are some big names that are, you know, that are out there. But, you know, when I saw you at the summit last year in Toronto, the response when you came, when you made your entrance was incredible.
Mm-hmm. I 100%. Remember, it's like I thought, like, yeah, it's going to be good because my other opponents, like, are pretty well known. You had Allison Kay, Priscilla Kelly, and Shalita Melissa. So it was like, at first I was like, oh no, they have me going out last. I was like, why? It's like, I was so like, ugh. And then when I came out, like, everybody stood up and it was so loud. Like, I felt the building was shaking. And if you watch the video, like, I have to stop. And it takes me a second to realize what's going on. I'm like, wow. Like, I needed that, like good, like, 5 seconds to realize and kind of embrace and let that sink in, like, what was happening. It was, like, it's one of the best reactions I had, yeah.
I actually have those videos as well. And being there was just phenomenal because the chants for Lufisto were deafening.
Yeah, and I lost. I can't win at Shimmer. It's an ongoing thing, so it's like
the Shimmer jinx.
But when you do win, at Shimmer, there you go. It'll be like a monumental thing. It'll be, you know, people will talk about it. Were you there the night that Lufisto won at Shimmer?
Well,
I look at it that way, matches. In a positive light.
I've won a few matches. I've never won any championships, though. I lost them all. All the championship matches.
I just would like to ask a question to piggyback off of what Jim said. Sure. You know, you've had a lot of accolades throughout your career. Is there maybe two or three that you're most proud of?
There's a few. I'm like really proud of the King of the Death matches with Necro Butcher. This is something I thought I never thought in a million years that I would actually wrestle him. And back then I was like, there was no other woman that ever was into a King of the Death matches, and on top of it to win it and against someone who's a hardcore legend, that's pretty, like, that's something that comes to mind. I would say my match with Joe Leader in Mexico, that was in 2005, and people are still talking about it. Often people are telling me that it's the best intergender hardcore match that ever happened on Mexican soil. And there's another one that comes to mind too. It's my match with Layla Hirsch in Germany last year. And long story short, my flight was late and I didn't sleep at all that night. And I had to go through the whole tournament. So three matches back to back with no sleep. And in the second match, I broke my wrist. So I taped up and I went into the finals. And still today, people still talk about this match as one of the best women's matches that ever happened on European soil. And a lot of people said that's where Layla was born. And she's been so, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say grateful, but every time she does an interview, she mentioned that match and that I'm her favorite opponent. And to me, it's so important that somebody who's new has a great experience with me. So there's so many aspects in this match that makes it special to me. The fact that we created magic together, the fact that she was comfortable with me, and she really trusted me. I set up the whole match, and she trusted me with everything. And the fact that I wrestled with a broken wrist and with no sleep, and I was able to produce such a match. It was like all odds were against me on this match. And we created magic. And last not least, the one, like I said, the one with Josh Alexander last year, that's really the match that I went, okay, I'm not ready to retire. I still can go, and I feel great. I feel better than before, actually. And if I can keep up with such an amazing athlete, I think I can keep going.
Do you prefer the deathmatch style or just a regular in-ring style?
Not anymore. I did the deathmatches because, well, back then it was very popular. And since I was one of the only girls on pretty much every roster, a lot of people were not taking me seriously. So through deathmatches, I felt I was able to prove that I could be as tough, as good, that I wasn't scared. I kind of used it to show that women did belong in the ring and we could take the shots and we were serious athletes. I know when you think about it now, you're like, I mean, death matches, it's like, and athletes, like, does it go together? But back then to me, it made sense because I needed to prove in every aspect of wrestling that I was as tough and that I did belong in there. But I do prefer 100% better matches that happen in the ring. Like, I love once in a while the you know, the free-for-all brawl where you go everywhere and you fight and with a few weapons. But I feel a lot more fulfilled having a good wrestling match where I believe I tell a good story than an actual death match. I mean, been there, done that, stopped in 2007, and don't really feel like having another one, especially right. for ultraviolet. I'll do, like, the stipulation matches, but not the extreme, the light tubes and the glass and all that stuff.
Well, I will give you mad respect for the death match stuff because you won the 2006 King of the Deathmatch Tournament. And then mm-hmm. next year you won the IWA Queen of the Deathmatch Tournament. Mm-hmm. And in 2001, I was in the IWA Mid-South King of the Deathmatch Tournament. And mm-hmm. I got my ass kicked in the first round by Axel. So I think it wasn't even 5 minutes. So, yeah, so I didn't fare too well in the deathmatch tournament. So mad respect for that, for going through all of that, because I definitely know how you feel on that.
You know what? If I may, I just am curious, since we're talking about death matches, Lou Festo, what was, like, the physical, mental preparation going into one of those? Like, how did you get yourself ready to go, both physically and emotionally and mentally, to go out there? Because it is tough. As Donnie mentioned, you mentioned, you know, it's a dangerous scenario where lots of can go wrong, and it's a tough match. So mm-hmm. how did you do that?
I was so focused at proving people wrong that it was my main thing, but I was always trying to be kind of like smart as much as I can with the weapons. I would clean my thumbtacks. I would make sure there would be no gas in the light tubes I was using. I would make sure that the tables didn't have like pieces of steel underneath. Like I was trying to be as intelligent as I could doing stupid things. But like little details like that where I really took care of everything I was doing, planning carefully. If I thought that a spot would be too dangerous, I would change it or not do it. Make sure everything is clean. And I always needed to tell a story even throughout a death match. Meaning that I would set up the death match the same way I would set up a regular match with, you know, the beginning and the shine and the cutoff and stuff, but I would wrestle with weapons. So there was always like a psychology behind it, because even if in the gore, in the blood and everything, I wanted to make sense as much as it could, like when it comes to wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Now, when it comes to hardcore matches, Lufisto, you've pretty much been an innovator on the women's side of hardcore. Have you ever wanted to wrestle Tommy Dreamer, or have you?
I've never. It would have been a dream match. I was fortunate enough to wrestle people like Sammy Callahan and John Sandig, and I was in the ring with Nick Gage and, like I said, the Necro Butcher, Mickey Knuckles also, who's a big name in women's hardcore wrestling. So I did have the opportunity to wrestle bigger names, and I actually wrestled the Dudleys. It was not a hardcore match, but I went through a table, of course. Nice. I was the victim of a what's up as well. but my tag team partners were Tony DeVito and Justin Credible. So okay. I still don't know how I ended up in that match, but that was pretty amazing. I wrestled the three Dudleys. But yeah, I would have loved to wrestle Tommy. And a lot of people are asking me now, would you do another death match? I'm like, well, if I wouldn't have to do another one, I'd like to wrestle John Moxley in a death match. Or maybe Darby Allin.
Okay. All right.
If I can go back to the beginning of mm-hmm. your career, you started training when you were 17. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
How was the training back then, as opposed to, I'm sure you've been to a few training schools, you know, doing seminars and whatnot. Mm-hmm. What are the big differences you see from back then when you started to current times?
I remember the first, I was like, the first school I joined was like a local school of not established wrestlers, like local wrestlers. And I remember my teacher telling me, of course, I was the only girl. Like now there's a lot more girls. That would be the biggest difference. I think there was a variety of different, like there's male, female, and not equal, but there's a lot more female now in the schools that they were back then. Like, I was the only one. And I remember my teacher telling me, well, you know, this is stuff physically, but for a woman, it's going to be terrible mentally. And I didn't know what he was talking about, but, you know, dealing with the guys and the guys that don't want to wrestle the girl and the not to be taken seriously and thinking I'm just there to do cat fights. There was so much more to deal with than I ever thought. I was just happy to be, oh, I want to be a wrestler because I saw The Undertaker and I like it. And I want to be like Alundra Blaze and Bull Nakano because I through their match, I've discovered Japanese wrestling. So I wanted to be like Akira Okuda and like these were my idols. And the difference also right now is that there's a lot of girls who join school that they do have models to look up to. They're going to look at Charlotte Flair. They're going to look at Bayley. They're going to look at the Awesome Kong, or like so many different people. Like you got Jordan, you got Taya. Like there's so many women wrestlers now of different size, different shape, different age. I came up into the Attitude Era, so I was always too fat. My boobs weren't big enough. Like lose weight nonstop. At least now, if a woman, like we'll definitely teach her to, you know, you got to be in shape because it's going to protect you in the ring. It's going to help with your cardio. You're going to be able to protect your opponent better. But it's not about just the look or to look thin like a model. So definitely something else that's very different from today than that.
Well, kind of springboarding off that question, according to what I've read, you had multiple different characters or names up until 2002 when you started using the name Mufisto. So two mm-hmm. questions. Whose ideas were those first names? And how did you come up with the name Mufisto? Because it is very original. Has that got a little bit of like an anime background to it or something?
It has. It has a comic book background too. The first name I had was Lucifer. And like Lucifer. And the only reason why I went with that name is because my first teacher had the nickname the Devil's Machine. And he's like, I'm going to start you as a manager so you can, you know, be, know how to deal with a crowd, be able to respond. And he was a heel. So it's like that way you're going to learn how to work with a crowd. So I was like, hey, Lucifer works with the Devil's Machine. So it was as easy as that for the name. Character-wise, it was a lot inspired by The Undertaker, more dark, and Darth Vader. I'm a big Star Wars fan. So my first entrance music was actually the Imperial March.
You see that behind me?
Oh, yeah. So that's where the first character comes from. The second one, well, my name got changed to Precious Lucy. And it was changed without asking me by the Mountie Jacques Rougeau. And I started wrestling for him. He's like, you can't use Lucifer. It's too heel. You're going to be a babyface. You look like, I had the blonde hair like Marilyn Monroe back then. He's like, you look like Marilyn. Can't do that. Not good. And I was like, no, I don't want to change it. But then one day I'm in the newspaper. And then I see the card of his next show in wrestling. Precious Lucy. I was like, oh. But we went on TV with this, and this was like the biggest newspaper in the province of Quebec, so I really got stuck with it. The good thing about it is that I was definitely not Precious when I was doing the hardcore. So people were like, oh, Precious, she must be like all cute and whatever. But then doing the hardcore and a more of an intense violent style. Mm-hmm. And I like the paradox of Precious Lucy versus the actual style I was presenting.
Okay.
So I kind of dealt with that. And then Japan called A to Z, and there was like, there's a Lucy here, and Daphne back then was using kind of a Lucifer kind of name, and she was mm-hmm. scheduled to go to Japan. So they were like, you can't use it, and we can't pronounce Precious right here, so you got to change your name. So I was like, what can I use that's going to sound strong, be able to be pronounced in any languages, and that's going to represent what I want. So what I did is I took the Lou from Lucy. And back then, if you remember, Batman had just came out, and there was the video, Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, and Kill Me by YouTube.
Yeah.
And there was supposed to be that character that was called Mephisto that was a singing devil. And I really liked the idea, because I used to sing in a band, and with the Lucifer, and I was like, man, this is really me. So I took the Lou and put Fisto together.
Okay.
And later today, like later, I just said, like, oh, it comes from Jedi Fisto. And they're like, yeah, but the movies were out after. Yeah, but he was in the books, and I was reading the books. So I'm like, so it comes a little bit, yeah, from Batman, from Star Wars, and my previous name altogether. It doesn't mean anything. But it sounds powerful, and you can pronounce it in every name. It's easy to remember.
Okay, yeah.
It was Kit Fisto.
Kit Fisto, yes. Kit Fisto.
Yes. You can't, I mean, you see my Darth Vader helmet, but my studio is covered in Star Wars. I've got all 9 movie posters. There's a light. Here you go. Let's look at this.
A light too. Yeah, a lightsaber.
my Darth Vader lightsaber. Oh.
So you had to get him going, didn't you?
We just talked about Star Wars all day.
The podcast has been derailed.
Wesley, let's talk about Star Wars.
Yeah, you brought up Star Wars. I've got a Darth Vader costume.
Nice. You know what's my... It's a stupid dream, but one day I think I'm going to do it. I've always wanted to wear like an Ewok costume and wrestle in it. Like for a place like Kaiju or something. I'm like, I have to do this. I just want to splash like, oh, looking like an Ewok.
Splash with an Ewok costume, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And then the little kid, ah! And I can sing the song too, so I'm like, you gotta do, gotta do that.
I like her more all the time. Yeah, I never would have guessed you were a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, I am.
That is great.
I guess I'll ask the question here because, you know, recently, I think it was maybe last week, intergender wrestling was the controversy of the day on Twitter.
Again?
I was going to say, I think this has happened before, but why do you think it's such a target of wrestling fans to gripe about?
Do you have an
opinion? Like,
I think it's like hardcore wrestling. You like it or you don't. And when you really don't like it, you don't like it. And you're very vocal about it. One thing I've always been aware of, even if I was doing the intergender matches, is maybe it's because of the perspective that I have from all the years. Because if you've been wrestling in the past 10 years, you probably never had a problem wrestling guys or girls. But when I started, guys didn't want to wrestle girls. It was going to make them look weak, look bad. I got stiff a lot because some guys didn't want to wrestle me. I got stretched. I got punched. I got my nose broken. So I think the mentality back then was so different. And then today it's more everybody knows it's scripted. Today you have to see it more as a movie. And I've always, that's actually one of the arguments I used when I was fighting the athletic commission in Ontario, because they wouldn't let me fight the guys. And I was like, how come you're having people fighting on movie sets? Catwoman was filming in Toronto or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Catwoman can fight Batman, but I can't fight Tyson Dukes. And it made no sense, because basically we're doing the same thing. We're live stunt women and men working together. I'm trained to do this. I know what I'm doing. It's my choice. What people mixed up and that they shouldn't with intergender wrestling is a lot of people see it as they're like, it promotes domestic violence. No, it doesn't. Because if you go see the Avengers and you see Black Widow kicking ass, you're watching the same exact thing. If a woman chooses to be in a match with a man, it's her choice. She can do what she wants if she's comfortable with that. I think, though, it all came from Landstorm, and I really think he came from a good place because he mentioned that some girls were obligated to do it, and he's right about this, that point. It's wrong. Nothing in wrestling you should have to do without your consent. If you're not comfortable doing it, if it's wrestling a guy, wrestling a girl, or doing hardcore, or if you're, they throw you in a Lucha Libre match and you don't know Lucha, and you might get hurt or hurt someone, it shouldn't be a thing. So I definitely believe he comes from a good place, but every time somebody talks about intergender, like everything blows up because everybody is either so passionate about it or they completely hate it for different reasons. But yeah, I mean, I've been dealing with that since 1997. So for me, every time it happens, I'm like, eh, once again, I've dealt with that. And right now there's a lot of girls coming together and defending independent, like intergender wrestling. But I remember when I was the only one and I was there with my little papers going to court for the women to wrestle the guys because I wanted to be seen as an equal. I mean, my perspective is definitely different than just going on social media and defend it. But yeah, I think it all comes to the passion of really loving it or hating it.
Okay. Yeah, so I got started in 97 as well. So yeah, I know how it was back then as well. So yeah, you're definitely spot on. Mm-hmm. And speaking of taking on the athletic commissions, could you come to Ohio and take on ours so we could run wrestling events again? Because we haven't been able to run this whole year.
Oh, my God. I mean, athletic commissions are, back then, like in Ontario, the main problem, if they're actually doing something for you as a promotion, the fact that you pay for them and deal with them is could be a good thing. But I remember in Ontario, we were paying for licenses. We were paying for insurance, and the promoters had so many different fees, but we didn't have doctors on the premises. There was no one helping with anything. It was just like money thrown in the garbage. I've dealt with the Pennsylvania commission. It's a pain in the butt. You can't bleed, the match is gonna stop, but at least there was a doctor there. If somebody was legit hurt, there was someone to take care of the worker. I don't know exactly what's the situation in Ohio, but I mean, a commission can be good, but it can be bad or not useful at all. So it depends where it is. Like,
yeah, they say they don't want bleeding and stuff in Ohio as well, but it still happens. But yeah, I mean, we have to do promoter's license and event, like pay for event permits, but the wrestlers don't have to get a license.
Okay.
Can I just ask real quick how the COVID situation is in your neck of the woods? From what I understand, Canada's doing all right.
Canada's doing pretty good. there was a few problems with the elderly people in, I don't want to say old folks' homes, but yeah, probably what I don't know what the term is in English.
That's what I call them. That's
what you call them. We have a specific term here, but I don't know the translation. But they were a little bit more effective. But they tried to contain the situation. And overall, our government has been really good about confining people, making sure there were strict rules. And yeah, pretty much like right now, we just have to go out with masks when we go inside. But we pretty much can live like a pretty decent life right now and do stuff. Actually, we can go to the movies. We can go. There's a few concerts in there. It's just when we are actually moving into a close place, we just have to wear the mask. As soon as we sit down, we can take it off. We can go to restaurants. We can go pretty much everywhere. The only thing that's not allowed are combat sports.
Of course.
Yeah. Imagine that, huh?
They had a meeting this week. I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Yeah, we had ours Tuesday, and no good, not good.
Well, you know, it's when you think about it, it's sweating on other people and there's fluids going. So, I mean, some promotions are still wrestling. I mean, All Elite is, Impact is, and so far they've been doing good. So there's a way to do it with testing. It's just that on the independent level, I don't know with the fees of testing and everything, if it would be, you know, possible.
It's a bit harder to do that on the independent level, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to mention was for quite some time now, you have been ranked in the top 50 females on Pro Wrestling Illustrated,
mm-hmm.
which is quite an accomplishment in itself, because how many years has this been going on since you've been ranked?
Well, I've been ranked in every issue since its beginning. There's only two people who did it. It's me and Natalia.
Oh,
okay. See,
that's cool.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. And, you know, I've talked to Jordan Grace before, and I know you two were Team Pog.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about Team Pog.
Team Pog happened. Team Pog. Professional athletes with glutes. Yes. Professional athletes with glutes. Me and Jordan had a match at Beyond Wrestling. And Denver, Colorado just put it online on Beyond YouTube page. And then the comments. One day Jordan sends me a message like, did you read the comments? I'm like, what do you mean? And then I go, Sam, like, oh, Lord. Did you see those big, beautiful ladies kicking ass? I'm like, oh, my God, look at the thickness. And I'm like, it kept going. And then here's that comment. Did you see those hot pogs kicking each other's ass? Oh, my God, I'd like to see them in the street fight. And I'm like, pogs? What is that? blame the French in me. Blame the French. I didn't know what a pog was. Of course, I Google it, and I'm like, badass white girls, okay. And then Drew Beyond was like, we need to team you guys. We need to team you guys. We have no choice. Like, you guys are over. I was like, okay, nice. So what's the name? I was like, well, we got to use Pog. I was like, I don't want to. And I'll credit to Annie Social. She's the one who came. I was like, yeah, Pog. Professional athletes with glutes.
Definitely works.
She found the name. And Jordan and I went on teaming until she signed with Impact.
Okay. All right. So another thing I wanted to mention is there has been this big push on social media lately, especially on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
They are really pushing to get you signed with AEW. I mean, how do you feel about that?
I feel like I'm so like grateful and I feel blessed. And on the other hand, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this because I don't want to look like the one who's like, oh, sign me. Although I would love to be signed because I think I could bring a lot to any women's division out there. But the way it happened is there's a fan, and I'm sorry, I forgot his name, made an awesome graphic of me versus Cody Rhodes.
I saw that.
People went nuts. Yeah. Like, they thought it was happening. I'm like, no, but it's great, though. And Cody was nice enough to say, it's like, hey, I'm not comfortable doing intergender matches, but Lufisto, she's worldwide known and everything. So people were like, well, then sign her. And then it started, the petition. And I mean, there's people who sign the petition, but every day, like I see on my feed, people going right at AEW, sign her, you need her, you need experience, you need this. I'm like, they'll probably, so I'm like, man, these fans are so awesome. And I'm like, wow. And on the other side, I was like, AEW must be so tired of seeing my name right now. I was like, oh, this is like, so it's weird, but it's great. The fans did it last year, the year before, to get me in the Mae Young Classic. And there was over like 2,500 something signatures. So I mean, it's great. The fact that people think that I belong on their TV and they want to see me there and that I could bring something great to a division, it makes me feel great. It makes me feel like I still have things to do and, you know, things to prove and that I could be useful to a company.
Well, I got to say this. If anybody's listening, make sure that you sign the petition to get Lufisto on AEW. And if anybody from AEW is listening, Wrestle Horror supports her 150%. Sign this woman.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Can I ask about your autobiography? Sure. You got it coming out. What's the pro? Because to me, it seems daunting for me to, if I was to write my own story, it would be, I wouldn't even know where to begin. So how's the process of putting that together?
That's exactly where I'm at now. I'm like, oh my God, how I can put like 25 years in. There's a lot of stories I've never told and like the story behind particular matches. So basically what's been happening right now is Greg, my co-author, he calls me, asks me questions. He's so good at asking the right question at the right time to try to get those stories out of me. And so we've been going through, talk to me about your bigotings, talk to me about your first match, talk to me about the first time you went to Mexico. What can you tell me about Japan? So he's been going with blocks of questions to specific things right now. Lately, the process I'm at now is like, let's try to see what matches matter and what matches, like, can we like narrow down the matches that are like really important. So I've been going year by year, because here's one thing that I did, and I'm like so happy I did. I kept statistics of everything since I started, where I wrestle, against who won the match, and you know, the date and the promotion. I kept everything. So it's been, sorry, my cat really wants to sit on me. So hi, this is Mr. Two. He's an attention whore.
I have one of those too.
He's like, he was trying to sit on me. I'm like, I'm going to catch him before everything falls down.
Okay. Hey, you had mentioned the book, Lufisto, and it kind of wants to put me on my soapbox for a minute, because with COVID-19 and all the stuff that's been happening all across the world, it's been a big wake-up call for the wrestling industry. Mm-hmm. A lot of wrestlers, a lot of promoters are struggling financially, hard to make money. So it's opened my eyes to where, you know, we need to start thinking of other ways to make money. And Jim and I have actually been, you know, brainstorming, and we're going to be coming up with ideas and stuff to start promoting that and doing that. And one of the things that has impressed me the most about you is your website. And you absolutely have got the knack for it. You have the idea. I mean, for any wrestler, referee, manager, promoter even, go to Lufisto.com and look at what she's got. And this is how you do it. This is how it's done. I mean, she's got a nice website, clean. It's got a biography. It's got her championships and stuff like that. It's got her store. She's selling, you know, pins. She's selling DVDs, pictures. You know, she's selling her stuff. She's getting it out there. She's got the calendar, the photos. And then you go to all, she's got all of her social media links. She's got a Patreon. I mean, she's putting so many hooks in the water, you know, and trying to come up with multiple streams of income. And now she's, you know, we just discussed, she's writing a book. So she's got the idea. And this is what we all need to be doing, whether you're a wrestler, promoter, referee, whoever you are. You need to start thinking of different ways. I mean, it seems to me like it's still like the old school mentality. You know, you get paid only by the booker and your gimmick table. And there's so many other ways to generate income and produce income streams out there now. So I wanted to pick your brain, because we always try to like pull a piece of like a golden nugget from everybody each time. What is your thought process on this, and what would you have to offer about this? Because like I said, I think your website's fantastic looking for a pro wrestling website. This is what they need to look like. And what can you give out or throw out there to try to help other people in the business in these hard times of earning some income?
Well, first of all, thank you, because I made the website myself. I'm actually, I have 2 degrees, multimedia and graphic design. So I actually use that to make my own merchandise, to make my own website, to make sure every image, you know, is on point when I share stuff on social media. Indeed, I mean, wrestling right now, it's with the internet. You can get so many fans from all over the world, but if you only sell your stuff at the merch table, your fan from Germany might not be able to get your stuff. There needs to be a way online, like everything, especially now with COVID, how many like stores and are staying afloat because they have an online store and they're capable of getting their products out despite like being closed to the public. As a wrestler, you have to think the same way. You are your own brand. You are your own product, and you need to sell yourself. With the Patreon, what I do is I have like unseen matches, because when I started, I would bring my little camera and I would film all my matches, and it's stuff you don't see anywhere, but with the Patreon, they see that, and I'll share some stories or what's the story behind this picture and try to give them more of a like up close and personal of the life of the wrestler behind the scenes. I'll answer all their questions too. And for the website, I've always thought that was something missing from wrestlers or wrestling company. A lot of people are using Facebook or Twitter, but there's nothing more professional than going on Google and, you know, type a name and there's an actual website that comes up. And that's the way I think for regular businesses too. If I need a place to buy some boots or whatever, I'm going to go online and I'm going to look at the websites. I'm not going to go on Facebook. Right. So that's like my thought process behind having a website that's clean, easy to navigate, and that makes it like, if you want to be a professional, you got to look professional. And I think online is the same thing.
Absolutely. Like I said, I think it's fantastic, and everybody that's listening needs to go check the website out to see what we're talking about. And like she said, you know, if you're a wrestler, you're not just a wrestler out there getting in the ring to impress your friends. You're a brand. You know, there's little kids that look up to you. There's people that look up to you. You know, you can monetize that. You can support yourself off of that. You just have to put in the work like she's done here, obviously. And so check it out. I thought it was fantastic, and I just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you.
And I'm a fan of the black and white jacket photos.
I have like some metal vests with patches and stuff, and I'm like, that'll be the next one.
I know that you talked a little bit about some of the favorites that you had growing up, but can you tell us a little more about your fandom? Like, how did it start? Maybe are there other wrestlers that you liked and whatnot as you were a fan? So can you tell us a little bit about your fandom?
Yeah, my first memory of wrestling is watching it with my grandma. She loved watching wrestlings on the weekend. We had a thing called Maple Leaf Wrestling here, and mm-hmm. it was on Saturday morning. And I don't remember if it was Maple Leaf back then, but she loved Andre the Giant. She loved Hulk Hogan. And I was more of I like the Ultimate Warrior. Like, I love intense people, apparently. I love, like, Roddy Piper. Even if he was a heel, like, I thought he had that something where, I didn't understand English much, but the way he was talking, I always thought he was, like, funny, entertaining, and he had the right lines at the right moment. But of course, at 6, I didn't understand a thing. But just the way he was in front of the camera, he was like so interesting to me. I like Bret Hart, of course. And when I quit watching wrestling for the longest time, and I was playing music, and I played bass, and I sang in a band. And my drummer one day is like, "Hey, have you watched wrestling lately?" I'm like not since like I was 8 years old or something. He's like, "There's this guy who builds caskets. You have to see him." And he was talking about The Undertaker versus Yokozuna. And that's really the feud that got me hooked to wrestling again, because I was like, he was so like impressive, and I liked the character and the storylines of him building the caskets with Paul Bearer. And that really, really got me hooked to wrestling again, because like I was mesmerized by him. And then I started collecting everything about him. He was like really my idol. And through him, because at the same time there was that feud with Alondra Blaze and Bull Nakano, I'm like, wow, I love Bull, and I love the style that they're producing. I think Medusa doesn't get enough credit for being so ahead of her time by bringing the Japanese style to North America. And through them, like, I back then it was like tape trading. we would send tapes through mail, and that's where I was like aware of the J Cups and of Gaia and All Japan Woman, New Japan, and all that stuff. So it started with that, like the tape trading, and through Japan, that's where I decided, like, I really wanted to be a wrestler. I want to be like them.
One thing you just mentioned that I guess I never thought of, and I apologize. You said that you didn't understand Roddy Piper a lot. So how did you learn English? Like, is that taught to the Francophones? Is that taught in school to be bilingual?
Yeah, it is at school. But for me, like, I loved the Ninja Turtles when I was a kid. Okay. And it was only in English. We didn't have a French version. So I would watch it and try to figure it out.
Okay.
And mostly it's video games, like The Legend of Zelda and Dragon Warrior, where people were like giving you like, you gotta go there, you gotta go there. So I was playing with my dictionary, trying to figure out what they were saying. And I've learned English through watching the Ninja Turtles and playing video games.
Okay. Well, I have a couple more questions, if I may. Because I was while doing research, I happened to go to your Twitter, and I just want to know, how underappreciated is King Diamond?
Oh, man.
I only say that because I have two podcast pals that they just now realized they both love King Diamond. And I'm like, you two should just have your own podcast, the King Diamond Appreciation Club, you two.
And here's my story about King Diamond. Like, I knew of him since the longest time, because when if you're a Metallica fan or like one of the bigger metal bands fan, they always name him as an influence or Merciful Fate. So my boyfriend's a big metalhead, and he's like, he was listening to King Diamond, and one day he keeps telling me like, oh, I think I got a guy crush on King Diamond. And King Diamond comes to Montreal, and it's like, yeah, that's going to be his Christmas present. Like, I'm going to bring him to see King Diamond. So we went to see him. We were like right in front, and wow, like, I totally fell in love with him. He is so good. Sound as great as on the records. And when he's live, he has this old theatrical set, and there's a lady that dances, and like, it's so impressive. And it was a smaller show too, but still like out of this world. And like, I've been listening to him like religiously since then. Like, I've actually, my God, there's one of my fans who's so awesome. He just bought me a bunch of picture discs so I could put them on my wall, because I collect them. And it's all like King Diamonds from the 80s. So I'm trying to figure out like how I'm going to set that up. It's going to look like a shrine to King Diamond.
That's the tweet I saw. And I was like, oh, that's pretty sweet. You know,
we bought the figure, like the exclusive
Super 7.
Yeah, it's not even out yet. You have to pre-order. We did. And so it's like, we're like such big fans. Like, I love the king.
the other tweet that I was just curious about. So are you a Canadiens fan?
Okay. I used to be. Patrick Waugh was like one of my idols when I was a teenager. Like, I remember vividly the 1993 Stanley Cup when they won. Howie kicked everybody's ass and he stopped every putt that was possible. Like, he was so impressive. And when he left, I switched. I loved the Avalanche because I was following Patrick Waugh. And then after, I really loved the Blackhawks for the longest time, the Patrick Kane and I went to see them too. Every time I would go to Shimmer, I would buy tickets to go to United Center so I could see the Blackhawks. I really wanted to hear their song, like the Digger. What's it called?
Their goal song is Chelsea Dagger.
Chelsea Dagger. Yeah. This is the greatest thing when they score and people are clapping and stuff. But then they won the cup. They traded everybody. And I kind of stopped watching hockey since then. But now I'm like, wow, the Canadians winning. So that's why I tweeted for the first time about hockey. It was like, wow, the Canadians beat the Penguins. That's something. Yeah. It's like, there's really something going on with the world right now.
Yeah, and I'm that Penguins fan that wasn't very happy. So
now they have the Flyers, so they're actually playing tonight. So we'll see how
yeah.
So I'm gonna turn this in a different direction, and this is Wrestle Horror. So I want to ask you, I mean, being that you're a wrestler and you love heavy metal and I can see your tattoos, what kind of horror do you like? You've got to like some horror.
Old school. Like when I was like about 10, 12 every weekend, back then there was like video stores, like Blockbusters and stuff. That doesn't, yeah. It's, I don't think there's any left in the United States either, right?
No. They're all gone. One.
Yeah, I think there's one in Missouri or something.
Yeah.
But back then, every weekend, I would go and get all the Jasons or all the Freddies, and I would go into a marathon of watching everything. I don't necessarily like the new stuff because a lot of it is gore, but it doesn't have, like, substance. It doesn't have, like, story. My boyfriend keeps telling me to watch Rob Zombie's movies, and I should give it a try. But I've been so, like, disappointed with a lot of stuff that I've watched. That's like my love for horror kind of faded throughout the years. I think the last one I really liked was the first Saw, because it was so different than anything else. But then after, it became repetitive. So I kind of just stopped.
Wait, I know you had Donnie at Jason because he's a huge Jason fan.
Yep, that's my guy.
And he's got a hockey mask in the background if you can see it there.
And my Camp Crystal Lake sign.
So definitely old school horror. That's great because, you know, I understand it. I was before Blockbuster, so I get it, you know. One story I always tell, and these guys have heard this story before, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, okay? When I was a teenager, my girlfriend and I watched this movie on VCR at my house, and I took her home afterwards. And me, being the devious mind that I am, went back to my house, got my chainsaw, drove back to her house, and crawled up underneath her window and fired up the chainsaw.
Oh, my God. Did she leave after that?
I heard a scream, and then I left. I don't know. To this day, she doesn't know that I did that unless she listens to this show.
You're lucky you didn't hear a shotgun rack.
The truth shall set you free.
So do you get into haunted houses or anything like that? Because that's more Jim's bread and butter there. He's a avid haunted house.
I haven't been in one, but these are like, if there's documentaries and stuff, like the paranormal thing, that's very interesting to me. I think I'm more into that now than horror itself, because paranormal kind of, like, it happens. Like, there's stories that are they true or not, but they're told by real people. So it makes you think, like, what's afterlife? Is there anything? Is there a thing that's crossing the other side, or somebody being stuck in here? Like, it's all like, yeah, it's really interesting to me and intriguing.
Interesting that you say that. It's a great segue. I actually do paranormal investigations as well.
Nice.
And I've been to some interesting locations, and I've seen some interesting things. I was at a location in Kentucky once where I heard tables and chairs moving on their own. I've been to a place in West Virginia where something grabbed my leg. And I've seen things. So I keep wanting to find out more and more about this because is something out there.
Definitely. My grandma, apparently, she had not visions, but she could see things and crystal balls and everything. And apparently I have it too. But when I was a kid, I tried to develop it, and then I started hearing stuff, and I kind of freaked out, and I just stopped. But it's in my family, so maybe that's why I'm, like, really intrigued by that. But I'm, like, I've never really pushed it, because you get to that point where you actually start seeing and hearing things. You're like, do I want to go further? Kind of yes, but no. But at like, 10, 12, like, you're scared, and you stop.
Yeah, that's the way I am. I've never done one, but I'm gonna go start going with Jim, and I'm just like nervous. I'm gonna get in there and like piss myself or something. Like, oh shit, I get too scared.
I've heard of a place in Ohio, an asylum or something, where there's like, I can't remember the name now, but I've heard something. I don't know if you've been there. It was near Dayton, or I don't know.
Let's see, Dayton.
Wouldn't that be the old, doesn't Athens have an old?
Athens has, Athens. Athens has one, and then there's the prison in Mansfield.
Yeah, there was a thing about the prison too that I heard.
Yeah, that's where Shawshank Redemption was filmed.
Yeah, it's definitely very active. And there's a big place in Kentucky called Waverly Hills Sanatorium, which I've seen a lot of stuff happen there. And I've been there like 3 times. And the fourth floor, that's all I got to tell you, the fourth floor.
You know what? You just reminded me of something. I'll just share it with everybody here. I saw today on Twitter that apparently somebody on eBay is selling a giant inflatable Michael Myers. And when I mean giant... When I mean giant, I mean like one of those wacky figure, like car dealership, like inflatables.
Big inflatable.
Yeah, Donnie. And he's got like only one arm's out because the other one's got like the knife, and somebody has.
So he just got one arm waving.
I saw it. And I sent it to my buddy because I'm like, dude, and he responded with, "Where's Dr. Loomis?" I'm like, I guess they didn't make a balloon for him. I don't know. So check it out on eBay. Giant Michael Myers inflatable that you can have outside your house.
That's awesome.
That would be great.
Lufisto, I did read something on your website. It says you're the crazy cat lady, and we've seen one of your cats.
I have four cats.
Four cats. Okay. I saw a Siamese. What other breeds?
I have a Siamese, a tuxedo, and two Persians.
Okay. All right. Cool. Cats are great for psychic abilities. Remember that.
I really think they know when they feel exactly what you're feeling. Like if you're sad, they know. If you're happy, they know. It's... I think they even know before you do. They're beautiful creatures. I don't have children, don't want any, but cats, bring cats.
I've got three cats. I've got a black one, I've got a tabby, and I've got an orange tabby.
Oh, I love those.
But I do have a daughter. And I mentioned,
she loves cats.
Yeah, she does.
And then you're good.
I mentioned it in the email. She's also training to be a pro wrestler.
Nice.
She's working with Cody Hawk. And she's just waiting, really just waiting for things to open up so she can start wrestling and make her debut. What kind of advice would you have for her starting out?
Well, the fact that she's in a good school with somebody of experience, that's a lot already right there. I would say never be afraid to say no if you're not comfortable with anything. There was a time where you could not, but today, like, it's more accepted where a lot of people are more understanding that if you're not comfortable doing something, it's okay to say no. It doesn't mean to be difficult, but if you feel you need that to protect yourself or your opponent, it's okay to say no. And make sure there's a lot of veterans around you. There's a lot more women veteran around you now. Never be afraid to ask questions and ask for advice. If there's one thing I truly feel was missing from my career is I didn't have that veteran woman, like the wrestling mom, we call them, that I could go to and ask for advice and, you know, ask questions. And I'm doing this wrong. What can I do to be better? And I had this argument. How can I fix it? Yeah, never be afraid to go and ask for advice and follow them.
So if I were to tell you that she could email you for advice, would that be okay?
Yeah, sure.
Super. Yeah, she unfortunately met the wrong side of a turnbuckle the other day. She's got a nice black eye because of it.
Good for her.
Yeah, it is. It's toughening her up some more, but she's a tough kid. She's 24, and she loves what she's doing. She just can't wait to get out there and do it in front of a crowd.
Nice. One thing that's really important, too, she needs to be happy in what she's doing. Like, it's, yes, it's serious, but there has to still be that element of fun and making yourself, like, feeling fulfilled in what you do.
Excellent.
Great.
Guys, do you have anything more for Lufisto?
I think we ran her through the gamut pretty much.
Well, with that being said, Lou, please let's plug all of your social media outlets, your website again. Let everybody know how they can find out more about you.
Sure. You can go on my Instagram. It's WoundedAtLufisto. Twitter is @Lufisto. Facebook.com/Lufisto. If you can't remember all this, it's okay. Just go on Lufisto.com and all the links are there.
Perfect. And now that I think about it, I have one last question. Where did the Wounded Owl part come from?
Wounded Owl, it happened. I used to be an anime, and it was time for a new gimmick because I was getting older and a lot of people were doing cosplay, and I just felt I needed something more closer to who I am. And I just wanted to have like a moniker that would kind of represent what I am and what I've been through. And I chose the owl because it's a majestic animal. It is very quiet, but it is very, if you attack, it's going to get really violent. It's going to defend the ones they love. And owl also represents the knowledge. So with all the years I've been in wrestling, the owl was like the best animal that would present me. And wounded simply comes from all the scars I bear from the death matches and the hard intergender and everything I've been through the past 25 years. So it was just like, yeah, I just felt it was the best thing that represented me.
Well, now that I hear that your backstory behind that, I understand it completely, and it makes perfect sense. So with that being said, Lufisto, thanks again for being a guest on the Wrestle Horror Podcast. This has been an amazing show. I'm sure everybody's going to love it. Make sure, listeners, viewers out there, that you go to AEW and say, hey, sign Lufisto. We want to see her on AEW. I'm Meat Hook Jim, along with Donnie Hoover, John Orlando, and our special guest, Lufisto. This is the Wrestle Horror Podcast. Thanks for listening and watching.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror. Instagram @WrestleHorror. Twitter @WrestleHorror. On our YouTube channel, the Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.WrestleHorror.com.